everybody, and welcome to a new episode of the Ungpodden. You guys are probably wondering why I'm speaking in English right now, because usually we do this podcast in Swedish. And that is because we have our first international guest with us today. Jennifer Mathieu, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to be here. I've been looking forward to it all week.
Good to hear. We've been looking forward to it as well.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So I think, should I start asking the first question?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. I'm just wondering, how did you begin to write back in the day?
Well, I always loved to write. And funny enough, I'm the daughter of immigrants. My mother is Cuban. And my father is Chilean. And my first language was actually Spanish. It wasn't English. Mm-hmm. When I went to preschool, so it's funny to me now because I'm an English teacher. And of course, I write in English. But it's funny to me because my first language was actually Spanish. But when I was started to go to school and I learned English quickly, and then I was reading, you know, children's books, and I was an early reader. I loved to read. And I asked my mother, I would tell her stories and I would tell her to write them down for me because I couldn't write yet. And then I would illustrate them. So I always loved to write. I came up with poems when I was very little and would make little books and little magazines and things for myself. I used to make a little newspaper for my family about everything that was happening in our family. When I was in fifth grade, so I was around 10, mm. 10 years old. My school had a book fair. We used to do like the science fair where everyone would have to do a science experiment. But I wasn't very math science. I wasn't very good in those subjects, but of course I was really good at reading and writing. And so I wrote a book called Mystery at Grandma's, and it won the whole, and my school was kindergarten, little, all the way to eighth grade.
Right.
And I won my book, Mystery at Grandma's, which was about these three little girls that went to their grandmother's farm and they were searching for gold that was buried there. It won the whole competition for the school. And I couldn't believe it that I had beaten out kids that were older than me. And the prize was that my book got to live in the school library for a year and other kids would check it out. And it was such an amazing feeling. And so I knew just that anybody would read something that I had written. It was wild to me.
Yeah.
So I went on writing, and then I was a journalism major, actually. I graduated from college and I was going to be a newspaper reporter. Mm-hmm. And I was for a while. But I didn't have the taste for blood, I think, that you need to have when you're a reporter. I loved writing. I loved writing stories. I wrote a lot about the arts and other things, but I became an English teacher in my late 20s. And I saw that my students, and this was almost 20 years ago, they were reading young adult literature of that time. And I had grown up on young adult literature like Judy Blume, and others, Beverly Cleary, Cynthia Voigt. And so I was reading the books that my students were reading at that time. And I thought I could try this. And it took a long time. I started writing. I wrote two young adult novels that were never published, but they were good enough to get me an agent. And then my first novel, The Truth About Alice, came out in 2014. And I would say from the moment that I started actually trying to write a young adult novel to actually having my first book published was 7 years. So yeah, so it's been almost 10 years now since that first book came out. And it's kind of wild to me. I really still kind of can't. I have a bookcase in my house where I keep my books, and I keep all the foreign editions of my books, and Moxie's been published, and some of my books have been published. And I still can't really believe it, because I'm like a high school English teacher. I'm a mom, you know, I kind of just think it's so, I don't think I'll ever stop being amazed that there are people around the world that read my books. And I'm very honored. I think the day that I stop being amazed by that is the day that I don't deserve to write anymore. So it's a long answer, but that's kind of my writing journey.
We like long answers, so don't hesitate. That's good. Well, you started talking about a bit about Moxie, and that was actually the first book I read by you.
I read
it in Swedish first.
Uh-huh.
And then I reread it a few times. So I think I'm on my fifth rereading of it
episode. Great.
And I mean, it was a huge success, I guess you could say.
You know, it really blew my mind how it took off. The idea for Moxie came to me in a big rush. I was sitting on my couch and I was texting with a friend of mine, my friend Kate. And I think that something was going on in my subconscious because I was going to see the band Slater Kinney. I don't know if you're familiar with Slater Kinney. So
they're
so good. And they were coming so through. I had tickets to see them like in a couple of days. And I think that must have been on my mind. So I was very into Riot Girl and I loved that music when I went to college, especially. And I made a zine when I was younger called Jennifer. Right. That was that I only a certain select few people will get to see that because I was crazy, right? I was 20 years old, you know, I was just putting everything in there. And but at any rate, Moxie, I thought about wanting to write because, you know, I heard once that you should write about your obsessions. You should write about things that you are obsessed with, right? So I've written about small towns because even though I've never lived in a small town, I'm sort of obsessed with the idea of what it might be like to live in a small town. I've written about cults. My second book was about a girl in a sort of a religious cult, and because I'm fascinated by cults and how people end up in them. And so, you know, I was sitting there on the couch texting with my friend and I was like, you know, I love Riot Girl. I love that whole thing was so influential in my life. And it hit me. I said, I don't want to write a historical book yet. I don't, even though I have done that now, but at the time I said, I want to write a book set now. And Riot Girl was a long time ago, you know, even though it's hard for me to realize that sometimes. And I hit on an image of a girl kind of taking a shoebox out of her mother's closet. And the mother had all of the Riot Girl stuff because the mom had been a Riot Girl.
Right.
And suddenly the story just downloaded into my brain. I was just like, this is it. And I was texting with my friend Kate. And what about this? And what about this? And I can make the zine and the zine will go in the book. And I've made the zine. It was like, and I've done zines. And so it came to me like that. And it was, and then it was funny because we went to see Slater Kinney a few days later and the friends that we went with, they have a daughter named Vivian. Wow. And I was like, that's it. That's the name. Cause I love that name. And so it's just kind of funny how it all happened.
Yeah. I'm so curious about what your thoughts are on like the mother daughter thing with the Riot Girl movement in common sort of, because I myself was also like considered myself a Riot Girl in the 90s. Mm-hmm. We used to play Bikini Kill covers, me and my band.
Oh, how great. I love
it.
Yeah. Have you seen the documentary about Kathleen?
I've actually also met Kathleen Hanna and I told her when we started out, we played Bikini Kill covers, me and my band. And she said like, oh, that shouldn't be so hard. You just have to find the E string. Because it's basically really the East. Yeah, it's really
I met her. I met her. I met her when she toured with La Tigre, her band, like 20 something years ago. I met her and she was so nice. And then I got to see them. I hope they're on this reunion tour. Are they coming to Sweden? Do you know?
I'm not sure. I think they're coming to Europe, but I'm not sure.
So.
They might. Yeah. I also saw them at that same time, like 20 years ago. That's when I met her. So
yeah.
I'm also excited if they're gonna come here.
So. Yeah. I saw them in Austin here when they came through on the reunion, and it was an amazing tour, amazing show. Sound great, and But yeah, I'm sorry, I cut you off.
Yeah, this is kind of drifting away from the subject. But anyways, we're all. Basically, you and me both are very like influenced by this this movement that happened, I mean, in the 90s, basically. Yeah. So yeah. What my question was, like, this is fascinating for me to see young people today getting like attracted by the Riot Girl movement, like Vivian does in the book. And what are your thoughts on this phenomenon with like mother daughters coming to shows and stuff like that? Have you been?
Yeah, well, I did think about it a lot. And in a way, I almost feel like the conversation between the, you know, Vivian and her mom in the book, because Vivian loves her mom, you know, they have a great relationship, but there's still tension there, you know, as Vivian is getting older and she's figuring out what she believes. And she sort of loves her mom's past and kind of, you know, idolizes it. But she also needs to make it her own thing too. And I kind of feel like it represents a conversation between the generations. And also, even really, as I was writing Moxie, it felt like a conversation between my younger self that was very idealistic, that saw the world in very clear terms. And then my older self, who, while I still believe that the whole culture of punk music and independent music and the politics associated with that are still very important to me. And I still think a big part of who I am. But I also think as we get older and we start to see things in shades of gray and maybe they're a little more nuanced or they're more complicated. And so I almost felt like Vivian and her mom, it was almost like a conversation between young me and old me. So, but as I was saying before we started recording, I had some students at the school where I teach. I teach at the largest public school in Houston. We have over 3,000 students, very diverse racially, ethnically. And I had some students come to me last year and they wanted to start a Riot Girl club because they were really into Riot Girl and would listen to all of those bands. And so I said, sure, I'll sponsor the club. And so they have meetings in my room and they talk about older music that I was into. But then they also talk about newer bands that are still sort of like living out those principles, those punk principles, those DIY principles. But they have a new twist on things. So, for example, we brought in this band Lagrimas, which means tears in Spanish. It's a punk band here in Houston that's made up of a lot of we have, of course, here in Texas, a lot of people of Mexican heritage or Spanish speakers. And so they sing in Spanish and English, and they're a punk band here, a very Riot Girl kind of feel. And so it's really cool. And the thing that I really love about the kids in my club and just punk in general and the way that it's been going, and I talk about this a little in Moxie, is the way that I think kids today in the punk scene, especially here in Houston, it's very diverse, very racially diverse. And, you know, Riot Girl, while I loved Riot Girl, and here in the States, it was primarily a white movement, white girls. Not that there weren't girls of color in Riot Girl in the 90s, there were, but it was a little exclusive in that way. And so I love the punk movement, especially here in Texas and in Houston, is very racially diverse. And the kids are really aware of all of that. And it's really interesting to see. And I like hearing them talk about that. So a lot of fun. I love it. And then they introduced me to bands that I didn't know about. So that's really fun too, you know?
So cool. Yeah.
I love that as well. My teams at the library, they're always recommending bands for me because they know I love music.
And
they like recommend loads of different stuff. I mean, I would have missed Billie Eilish
if they hadn't told you. I know. When they find out that I like music and that I'm into music, then they all want to give you, you know, all kinds of tips and playlists and stuff. I think it's great. Yeah.
So speaking about Moxie, I know, do your students, do they read the book?
You know, yes, I have had several students read it. Yeah. And many of them have seen the movie.
Yes.
And it's funny because they just think it's kind of weird. They don't, They're like, did you really write this? And I teach and I live under my married name. So I live under a different last name. So they know me as a different last name. So okay. They see Mathieu and they're like, that's you. And then I have to tell them, yeah, that's me. I wrote it. And then they just kind of can't believe it because I'm their English teacher. You know, I'm up there teaching them how to write an essay. I'm grading their papers. I'm telling them to turn in their homework. Mm-hmm. And then they read Moxie or some of my other books. And my books are for teenagers. So I have teenagers being real teenagers in my book. You know, they make mistakes. They do dangerous things sometimes. They're like, Miss, you know, do you really, is this, you know, like they're almost shocked that I would write, you know, some of the things I write, but I think that they like it. And I have had kids read it. And then one thing I really like is that I've had some of my students who are writers themselves. In fact, just this week, on Friday, I had a student of mine send me some of his writing and asked me to kind of give it some thoughts. And I typically don't do that because if I read everything that everybody sent me, I would never be able to live my life. But with my students, I will, because they're my students. So so it's really great. Like, I love to give, you know, feedback and offer advice and encouragement, you know, to keep writing. So it's mostly a good thing, but I think they think it's weird. I think sometimes they're just like, they, you know, and this was funny. This is a really funny story. So I do have copies of Moxie and some of my other books in my little classroom collection, because I have a lot of young adult novels in my classroom. And I had a young woman last year. She picked up, this is the funniest thing that's ever happened. Her name was Lydia, and she picked up a copy of Moxie, and she had seen the movie. She had seen the movie on Netflix, and she picked up the book and she said, I didn't know that Moxie was a book. Like, she didn't realize, you know, she just thought it was a movie on Netflix. And she said, I didn't know that it was a book. And I said, oh yeah, it was a book. I wrote it. And she almost passed out, because not only did she not know it was a book, then that I wrote it. She was like, no, you didn't. I said, yeah, no, I wrote that book. No, you didn't. I did. What? Like, she just couldn't. She was screaming. And then she said, why are you even here? You know, because then they think I should be like a famous millionaire or something, you know. Why are you here? What are you doing here? And I said, well, I like teaching. I want to be your teacher. I enjoy it. And she just couldn't believe it. So then I ended up signing. I got her a copy and I signed it to her and we took a picture. It's somewhere on my Instagram, but it was so funny. It was so, so cute.
Oh, but how do you feel about the movie then?
You know, I was really happy with the movie. When I knew, you know, Amy Poehler, when I found out that she wanted to make it, I knew that it would be great because I love her, and I knew, and she's friends with Kathleen Hanna, and she was into that whole scene herself. And she is a feminist and is very open about her own feelings on the topics that I talk about in that book. So I knew it would be in good hands. When she reached out, you know, her company reached out to my agent, all these calls that happened. But I did actually talk to her on the phone, and I did meet her because I got to go to the set of the movie. But when I talked to her on the phone, of course I was nervous, but she was so nice. And one thing I got, she immediately got the mother-daughter element of the movie. Like, she understood that was a very important dynamic that needed to be really done well for the film. And so, you know, when we talked, not that it was a surprise to me, but I just got the sense when we talked that she was going to do it justice. And I didn't have any involvement in the film. They did send me, you know, they gave me an executive producer credit, but that's just a vanity. Like, it's just a nice, it's just like to make me look special, but I didn't do anything on the movie. They did send me the screenplay and a couple of versions of it, and asked me to give my thoughts, which I did. But, you know, really, when you as an author sign over the rights to the film, they have the right to do anything they want, really. Yes. So I went to the set in October of 2019, and I got to meet her, and I got to see the set, and I I had a moment as a, like, very far in the background. You can't really see me, but I'm a chemistry teacher in the background of one of the scene where they're something blows up in the chemistry room and Claudia's talking about whether she should wear a tank top. Anyway, but overall, I really liked it. I really, really liked it. The kids were as I pictured them. The one thing that a lot of my students and my friends have said is that they wish that it had been set in Texas, because of course the book is set in Texas. Yes. In a small Texas town. And in the movie, it's set in the Pacific Northwest, you know, where so much of Riot Girl started. So, you know, I understand why they wanted to move it. But the you know, Texans love to be from Texas. So yeah. they were like, oh, it should have been set here. So, but I was really happy with it. I was really, really happy with it. And I love the scene. I love the Linda Lindas that they brought in to play. Yeah. Was so cool. I mean, that was amazing. So yeah, it was a lot of fun.
I guess when you mentioned it that your students hoped that it would be set in Texas and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I really feel I should ask you about the sense of place mm-hmm. in your books. I know that you're a very proud Texan, and you're like champion your state, or at least some of it, at least not mm-hmm. all the yeah. politics and stuff.
Yeah.
But I mean, the East Rockport place is a fictional town, right?
Say it again.
East Rockport, is it a
real
place?
Oh yes, East Rockport. Yeah. No, so it's actually not a totally real place. So for context, I wasn't born here. I was born right outside of Washington, D.C. Mm-hmm. And then I went to college in Chicago. Mm-hmm. And then I moved here in 2000. So like over 20 years ago, I moved to Houston for a journalism job. And then I've never left. I met my husband and this is where I made my life. So East Rockport is not a real place, but a lot of the small towns, the Texas towns in my book are modeled. There is a town in Texas called Rockport.
Yes.
That's near the water, near the coast. Yes. Mm. And then my first book is set in a town called Healy, which is a small town outside of Houston. Well, there's a town called Sealy, and I kind of changed the name. So a lot of my book, all my books are set in Texas. My fifth book, the one that came out after Moxie, is set on an island called Mariposa Island, which is sort of like modeled after a real island off the Gulf Coast called Galveston Island. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, the book that's coming out in September, Down Came the Rain, and then my book Bad Girls Never Say Die are actually set in Houston. So yes. I love Texas, even though I have a lot of problems with Texas. I don't like our politics. I don't like our gun laws. I don't like our women in Texas, people in Texas who need abortions can't get them. I have a lot of problems with the politics here, and I'm open about that. But Texans also there's a culture of people here, there's a culture of being here that's very much in alignment with kind of punk, in that I'm going to do what I want. I'm going to make it my own. A lot of people come here from a lot of different places and they want to strike out. I mean, there's a whole story, you know, this whole idea of the Wild West and all of this kind of making it on your own is kind of part of the culture here in a way that I do love. And the people here are very friendly. And what I love about Houston in particular is it's so diverse. It's one of the most diverse cities in the United States. And there's every kind of people here. So there's so much that I love about Texas. And that's why I set my books here. And Moxie in particular, because I think the idea of rebellion and speaking out and fighting for what's right is very Texan. Right now things are tough with some of the people that are in charge, but you know, I don't know if you know, there's a man here called Beto O'Rourke who ran for governor, and And he was, to me, that's Texas. And he was really into punk when he was young. He was a huge punk fan. And so that's Texas to me. And so it kind of makes sense that Moxie's in East Rockport, this kind of invented place. And I don't know, it just, I think all my books, whatever I write, I'll probably always set them here. I don't know why. It's a special place to me, even when I struggle with some of the things that we're going through.
Right. Well, I'm guessing actually that I love East Rockport, even if it's an imaginary place.
Like the whole Rockport is a beautiful, Rockport's a cute town. It's kind of similar to Rockport, like by the water. And I had a friend of mine, a colleague of mine, my very first book is The Truth About Alice, is set in this small town. She grew up in a small Texas town called Weimar. And when she read The Truth About Alice, and she said, I almost couldn't handle it because it was too real. Like what it's like to grow up in a small town where everybody knows your business. Everybody talks about everybody. And so that was a real compliment for me. Like people that have grown up in small Texas towns where they read my books like Moxie and they're like, oh, you nailed it. Like what it's like to be from these little towns outside of the big city where everybody knows everything about you. I'm sure that's true of small towns all over the world, you know?
Yeah, it really is. I just love how you depicted the people of East Rockport, like with Vivian, of course, and her mother, her friends, her grandparents, but just love. And the people at school, like, this for me, looking at America and the States, we usually get a lot of high school movies that are about high schools in the USA. And there's always like certain groups and stuff like that. And it's just, you twisted that somewhat, but they still are the groups like the jocks and the nerds and the quiet ones.
I tried to make it feel real because high school does have those groups still. I mean, I teach in a high school. We still have, you know, the punk kids that come to the Riot Girl Club. We still have the cheerleaders. We still have, you know, all of those things. And football is a big deal here. It is. Yeah. It really, in all of Texas, football is a big deal. The truth is that people, including teenagers, are rich, complex people, human beings. And I made a very conscious decision when I was writing Moxie that the cheerleader was going to be, and this is one difference in the movie. I don't want to say I didn't like it. The movie did its own thing. But in the book, it's the cheerleader, Emma, actually starts the walkout. She's the one who stands up and writes Moxie on her arm and starts the walkout. And she's very important in the movie, too. The character is. But when I was writing the book, I made a very conscious choice that I wanted the cheerleader to be seen as much of as a feminist in the end as Vivian or, you know, any of the other girls that feminism, that you can be a cheerleader and be a feminist. You can be, you know what I mean? You can be beyond a stereotype.
Yes.
I think that's very, it's very interesting in your books that you have this kind of sisterhood feel between maybe sometimes like people that you wouldn't have thought would become friends or make unions between each other. Yeah. And a lot of friendship, I mean, it's all about, most of it is about friendship, is my like experience with your books. I think that's really, it's really nice.
Thank you so much.
Those themes. Yeah.
Thank you. That we're just trying to be, we're just human beings trying to make connections with each other. In all of my books, Moxie, of course, included, when I stop and think about it, that's kind of been a theme in a lot of my books, is people that you wouldn't expect to end up in having a connection end up having a connection. You know, Bad Girls Never Say Die, which came out most recently, which is sort of my homage to The Outsiders, and it's set in Houston in the 60s. You know, we have the rich girls from the rich girl from the right side of the tracks and the poor girl from the wrong side of the tracks, and you know, they connect. So it's something that I think I've kind of explored in all of my books, is this idea of friendship blooming in unexpected places.
I really, when I read The Bad Girls Never Say Die, I guess the first time I read it, I was actually disappointed with it.
Oh no!
Because
I was
expecting Moxie 2.
When I
reread it a few days ago, I actually upped my grading of it on Goodreads.
Oh good!
Then I got the idea of it much better. And
I know it's sad. I mean, I don't want to spoil it for anyone, but it's. If you've read The Outsiders, it's a sad ending in some ways, but in some ways a hopeful ending too. But and you know, as a writer, I think, and you know what, my publisher might have wanted me to write a Moxie Part 2. You know, they could make money off of it, right? Me too. But
yes, of course.
But as a writer, I think and again, maybe going back to my punk roots, like. I want to do what I want to make the art that I want to make, you know? And so I don't want to write Moxie over and over again. You know what I mean? Even though there are parts of Moxie that I am very proud of that I think will come back in other books that I write. But I'm glad you like Bad Girls a little more on the second reading.
Yeah, I loved it. I actually thought it was, there were great like similarities between Moxie and Bad. I think they speak to each other, but different time periods. But sort of, kind of. I read Moxie first, and then Bad Girls Never Say Die, and I think they. Yeah, I saw the connection, even though I mean it's not a Moxie 2, but it doesn't have to be because it's a different.
It's a different setting.
With other problems, but also some of the same problems.
Same things, right? I mean, some of the things are not that different, especially in Texas. Things haven't changed as much as they should have, you know?
Yeah, so. I was thinking a lot about that when you look at the stuff happening in Bad Girls, like it's 1964.
Yeah.
It's like the new left hasn't arrived yet, and the progressive stuff just brewing under the surface.
Yeah,
and all of a sudden it just makes me kind of sad, because looking at the world today, it's like the same problems, the same kind of curbing of women's rights, and really struggling with those issues are like nothing's has really happened.
Yeah, I mean, you know, without giving away names in case anyone wants to read the book, but in Bad Girls Never Say Die, there's teenage pregnancy and abortion is not available to the characters. And here we are in 2023 in Texas, and abortion is not available to us here now in this state. Thankfully it is in other states, but it's a burden to ask people to travel. But that's a cause that I care very much about, bodily autonomy. And so it's really disturbing to me that book is still realistic in that way, you know. So not something I'm personally very happy about, but
yeah, I totally understand that. You mentioned that the Bad Girls Never Said I is like a retelling. I guess it was always a retelling of The Outsiders.
It's sort of like a love letter to The Outsiders. It's not a total retelling because The Outsiders is still in copyright, so legally I can't do that, but it's similar themes, you know, the bad girl group, the greaser girls, and then, you know, this girl from the right side of the tracks, the rich girl. But there are these things like I have a scene at a drive-in, I have some running away, I have death and tragic teenage, you know, love and all of this, which, you know, is also in The Outsider. So there's some similarities in the setting or in the some of the events that happen, but it's its own story, you know, it's its own. Yeah.
But you must have done a lot of research, I guess, when you see, like you say in the end of the book, that you've interviewed people and done lots of things to know.
I don't know. People who write historical fiction, like Ruta Sepetys or these, that write these, I don't know that I'll ever do it again. It was so hard. And I thought it was going to be like an easy book, because I love The Outsiders. But I wasn't alive in 1964, so I did not know, and so I took out all of these senior citizens. I took them to lunch. This was before COVID, and I was taking them out to lunch and I was interviewing them, and it was really fun. And I went to the downtown library here in Houston, and the librarians were so wonderful. And I said, I need to know about teenage gangs in Houston in the 50s and 60s. And the librarian was pulling out all these old newspapers. It was so cool. Yeah. And old yearbooks. And my editor was like, you have to start writing the book. You cannot just do the research, but it was so, but I'll tell you what, it's hard to write historical because, like most writers, I like to put detail in my writing, and so I have this scene where, the main character is going to sit down and eat lunch, and Evie's going to take her lunch out of, and I thought to myself, how do teenagers bring their lunches to school? Today, maybe they'll have a paper bag, maybe they'll have a cooler bag, maybe they'll have a recyclable bag or whatever. They have plastic water bottles, but do they have thermoses? How would you bring your lunch to school? So, every 10 seconds I was coming up against something where I didn't know how people would have done that. And so I had to do research. So it took forever to write that book, actually. That was one of the harder books I've ever written because of the research. Yeah. And it made me think, I don't think I want to write historical fiction again. It was a fun experiment and I loved doing it. And my fifth book is set in the 80s, in the late 80s. So that was technically historical, but I remembered the late 80s. So that wasn't hard. Yeah. I don't ever want to write a book when I wasn't alive because I think it's just too hard. It's too difficult.
A lot of research, yeah, of course. Yeah. I would like to ask you about your books. The common thing I find about your books is you're writing always about girls and feminism and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And you have male characters in the books, but they are always kind of like in the background. Mm-hmm. How do you think about writing male characters that are there, but not becoming bland and not interrupting the main themes of your books? Because they are there and they are beautifully portrayed, or at least they are filling roles that are needed in the books. I would just like to know your thoughts on that one.
I guess I just try. I think with all my characters, even the minor ones, male or female, I try to have a backstory in my head for them. Even if they're not on the page as much, I in my head know what's going on with them, so they hopefully don't seem too flat. So like in Moxie, the character of Seth, and Seth, that's another difference in the book. In the movie, he's been there forever. Yes. And, Vivian knew him when he was little. And in the book, he's the new guy,
Yes.
And so I think I just try to create a big backstory in my mind for these characters. Even in Bad Girls, Johnny, the love interest for one of the characters, he's not on the page very much. But I wanted him to be a rich enough character that you could understand why another character would be in love with him, So I think it's just a matter of creating a world in my head for all the characters, even if they're not the main character, if that makes sense.
Yes. Total sense.
Good.
I'm looking at my questions here. Yes. Do you have I guess you already answered it in a bit. You did a lot of research for Bad Girls Never Say Die, but how do you go about actually doing the writing? Do you Right before you go to school or after or during the weekends?
I write a lot when I'm working on something actively. I typically write a little in the evening. You know, obviously I still work. I'm a mom. I'm a wife. I do a lot of different things. But I tend to write. I feel like, you know, a lot of people say, how do you do it? How do you do it all? But writing it, it's like exercise. Not that I'm always that good about remembering to exercise, but it's like if you do a little bit, but you do it often enough, it'll pay off. So I may only write for 30 minutes or something, but if I do that 3 or 4 times a week, you know, it'll add up. And then in the summer or on breaks or on the weekends, I get longer stretches of time. You know, my son's almost a teenager now, so it's, I don't have to arrange, like, you know, my husband has always been, obviously I married a feminist man, so he's always been very like 50-50 in terms of making sure, you know, helping and making sure that I have time that I protected it to write. But I guess I just do a little bit often, and then it eventually starts to add up into a book, you know? And I just find the time that way. I do outline. I don't know if you can hear my cat. Can you hear my kitty cat?
Yeah, I have cats as well, but they're not in the room right now.
I tried to put him away and he's meowing. Maybe he'll come out. But anyway, his name is Mr. Whiskers. So that's okay, kitty. Do you want me to put him up? Do you want me to put him away?
No. It's just
he's
fun.
Talking.
He wants to be in the podcast.
He wants
course.
To be. That's Mr. Whiskers wants to be in the podcast. I typically outline my books pretty. You know, I don't do like every single. I don't know every single thing that's going to happen. I know some writers that'll do that. They're very like this. But I know like the big beats, like the big, you know, moments, and then I'll write them down, and then I start to kind of fill in the gaps as necessary. Hang on. Let me see. Let me go get him real quick though, because hang on just a second. Well, stop. I think he stopped. Okay. He's a very talkative. He's a very, very talkative cat. But so I'll have the big scenes, the big beats, and then I will, like I said, as I'm writing, you know, I'll fill things in. And sometimes the characters will surprise me. Like I don't even, you know, expect something and something will happen, you know, they'll do something on the page and then it kind of takes me in a different direction, but that's kind of how I do it. Yeah.
Yeah. But can you tell us something about your upcoming book?
Sure. Yeah. So this book is coming out in September of 2023 and it's called Down Came the Rain and it's set here in Houston. And so something that my students and that I am concerned about is climate change.
Right.
And living and young people especially for good reason are very concerned because the future of the planet, you know, they're going to live it much longer than I am, you know. And so we lived through it was right before Moxie came out. We in 2017 we lived through Hurricane Harvey here in Houston.
Yes.
And it rained for like 4 days. And I know probably over 20 people whose houses flooded. I had so many students. We missed a month of school. I had so many students whose houses flooded. Our house did not flood, fortunately. But it was so much trauma. Like I could not even sleep. Like if it rained for like 2 years after the storm, if it rained, I couldn't sleep because it would make me so anxious. And when it was happening, my husband and I were taking turns getting up in the night to look to see if the water, because the water was getting close and like, is it getting closer and closer? And it was awful. And so I wanted to write a book about climate change and I wanted to write a book, of course, set in Texas. And so I decided I was going to write a Hurricane Harvey book. And so this book, it imagines if two high schools in Houston, one maybe a little wealthier, a little more upper middle class kind of school, and then one that's not as well resourced, if they ended up having to share a space because one of the high schools flooded. And this actually happened in the suburbs of Houston in a different town further out, but which is where the idea came to me. And so it's told in dual POV. It switches between between a boy and a girl. Yeah, I'm excited.
I love that.
Yeah, I'm excited about it. I'm excited about that. And so they, it's really about how they're managing their climate anxiety and how they start a climate justice group together. And one is from the, you know, the poorer school, the less resource school, and one is from the more well-to-do school. And it's really how they manage their climate anxiety. And there's a little bit of a romance as well. So it was really inspired by my students because they care so much about this topic. And like I said, so do I. But it's also kind of a love letter to Houston, too, because this city, the way that it came together after that storm and rebuilt and helped each other out, it was really just something beautiful to witness. So in a weird way, it gave me a lot of hope. It's like if this city that is one of the most diverse cities in the country can figure out a way to come together and help rebuild and help each other out, you know, like it just gave me hope for humanity. It's like we have to find a way to manage this crisis that the whole planet, literally the whole planet, is going through and will go through. And so I try to address issues too of like how certain areas of the world are more impacted, you know, depending on money and resources. And so, but I really enjoyed writing it, and we'll see. So the characters are Eliza and Javier, and Eliza is the girl from the wealthier school, and her house flooded. And then Javier is from the less wealthy school, and his house didn't flood, but he has a lot of anxiety about the rain, which was kind of modeled on my own feelings. So there's a little bit of me in there too, I guess, too.
I'm looking forward to reading it.
Yeah, me too.
I'm excited. Yeah, I mean, young people care, you know, it's such an important topic. And kids, I know, that's just one of the first things they talk about when I ask them what are you worried about? What are you, you know, concerned about? The climate, you know, that's one of the first things they tell me. So I hope this book will, you know, help them. And then I ended up, one of my very best friends from college started a climate organization group called Dear Tomorrow. And she helped me write, she really wrote it, like a resource guide at the end of the book with a lot of information about, you know, global organizations for, so young people can continue to get involved. And so that was fun to do too.
I totally understand that. Well, yeah. I don't have any more questions. Do you have any more questions, Tove?
No, I don't think so. but I could go on talking to you.
I could go on talking to you. Nice. Well, it's just been so nice to talk to you both. I loved your questions, and I'm just honored to be your first international guest.
I was totally stoked when I asked you first on Instagram.
Yeah.
And then, like, it's Jennifer.
Holy I'm happy fucking, to do it. Yeah. I'm just a high school English teacher in Texas.
Yeah, I guess that was really the thing that I've been in touch with, like, other authors, agents, much bigger names, I guess you can say. Mm-hmm. But they were like, no, they don't travel. No, they have too much to do. And you were like, yeah totally sure. Do it.
And you know what? I'll be really honest. I do get a lot of, I'm not trying to sound like a big deal or anything. I get a lot of requests, and I actually do have to say no to a lot of them because I need to protect my, my mental, you know, I need to protect my time, you know, especially because I am still a teacher. Like if I said yes to everything, I would never have time to write or just to be a human being and relax and, you know, but yours sounded so interesting. And I thought, well, I'd love to do it. And it's, you know, just happy to do it, especially it's in Sweden. I just wanted to do something, you know, try an international. I feel international.
Yes. But you actually, I mean, some weeks this podcast has more downloads in the USA than we do in Sweden.
Oh, that's amazing.
That's really, really strange for us because, I mean, how many people actually speaks Swedish in the US.
Yeah, I don't know that number, but you know, the United States, I'm telling you, the United States, well, I could say a lot, but it's something I've come to love about this. I mean, I love this country, and you know, I'm the daughter of immigrants, and there's every kind of person here, you know, yeah. And that's kind of a beautiful thing. And so, yeah, there was a Swedish restaurant I think I used to go to in Chicago. I think there's a lot of Swedes in Chicago. Yes. Yeah. So there was a Chicago restaurant. I forget what it was called now, Ann Sather's or something anyway. But yeah, so there's pockets. You never know. There's a whole pocket of German speakers in the Texas Hill Country. Yes. So, you know, there's everything here.
But thank you very much.
Thank you both so much. And thank you to your listeners. And I just loved being here. Thank you.